Hi, CityCast listeners. It has not even been a year since the opening of Chop and Block, a fast casual Nigerian restaurant in post-Houston. And already, it's one of Houston's most visible, most praised restaurants. Today, CityCast newsletter writer Brooke Lewis and I are talking with Chop and Block's founder, Ope Omosu. It's Wednesday, September 28th, 2022. I'm Lisa Gray, and this is CityCast Houston. Chef Ope, thank you so much for being with us today. How would you describe Chop and Block to someone who has never been there?
That's a good question. So Chop and Block, I say it's the cultural crossroads where West African culinary traditions and local communities intersect to share an experience that's fresh, honest, friendly, and flavorful. And really, it's just what I believe has been a life-enhancing experience for, you know, most of all who get an opportunity to come and fellowship with us.
So how did you start it? How did you come to start it? And what is your connection to West African food?
Yeah, so I would say, I grew up on West African food. I'm Nigerian. Was actually born in England, but made it out to Houston by the age of 3. And, ultimately grew up in a Nigerian household in America. So definitely something that's been a part of me, just the cultural aspect since day one. And the older I got and just the further along I got in life and my career, I started just to really feel uneasy about the lack of access there was in the broader community to the culture that I grew up knowing and loving so well, as well as the lack of acknowledgement for a lot of the contributions that the culture, the diaspora play into broader society. And so I just wanted to take the opportunity to shine light on that. And that's really where the passion for pursuing this came from. Not so much about food, unfortunately. Uh-huh. I know people don't really like to hear that, but
you didn't think as a little kid you're gonna be a chef?
No way. And if I'm very honest, I still don't even really call myself that. I just had to pick up techniques on my way of being able to really channel this story. But you know, as I look at it, to me, the storyline is what's most important. The narrative is what's most important. And I wanted to make sure that if I felt as passionate about it, I had my own opportunity to contribute towards it. So good food and a good beat is just a universal language that everyone speaks. And so that's why I figured that would be the best medium to be able to make this imprint.
Yeah. And growing up, I know that you have some interesting nicknames that led to your chef journey. I know Chef Homeboy is one of them. And then also you made something called Ope Sauce in elementary school. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about that?
Oh, wow. You're really going into the archives. Yeah. So, you know, for me, food has always been, associated with just good times, good experiences, and a lot of nostalgia I have goes back to me participating, not as a cook or a chef, but really just, you know, savoring the flavors that have come across many plates of mine. But actually in grade school, I was probably in second or third grade, and we had just started, you know, getting access to the school cafeteria. Before then, lunch would always be brought to the classroom. And so, you know, there's different condiments over there. And I figured, hey, let me go ahead and mix a little bit of this ketchup with some mayo and some mustard and salt and pepper. I mean, that's the recipe. It's pretty basic, but, and people started dipping their French fries in it and they gave me the credit for it. So that was what the initial Ope sauce was. But then, Chef Homeboy, that came in my college days, actually, back in my fraternity members gave me that name. Uh-huh. I played football in college, but Truman State, Northeast Missouri. During family weekend, one of the things as a fraternity we'd like to do is just, you know, give back to the community at the same time, you know, hang out with the family and parents and everyone coming in. And we would throw big, big barbecues. And so the very first one, we woke up the day of on family day and realized that we had been promoting this barbecue and none of us knew how to cook on a barbecue. None of us knew how to grill. And so fortunately, there was someone who just happened to be, he actually joined another one of our fraternity members from a different school on this road trip. And he happened to be in the house and he taught me how to grill. And from there, I took my skills and continued to polish it to the point where they looked at a can of Chef Boyardee and they were like, no, we're going to give you Chef Homeboy. That's you. So that's the other nickname I was able to garner. I feel like I earned that one.
So what were you studying in college? Were you planning to go into business?
Absolutely. So I was a business major, marketing and management. I never really knew exactly what I wanted to do outside of athletics. But I did feel like, one day I wanted to build something and I wanted to be able to lead something. And I thought of business really being, where I saw myself and ultimately leading some sort of company. And my natural knack is in marketing. So that's what I channeled. And then, after getting out of school, I took a couple of sales jobs. I started my career in sales. And then I went and got an MBA at Rice and focused on energy and entrepreneurship and ultimately became a commercial executive in the energy space.
That is not anywhere near restaurants.
That's what I'm saying.
So what were you doing after you got that? Yeah.
So, I ended up getting a job working on basically helping roll out the production chemicals business I was working for GE at the time, globally. So I was in charge of markets in Southeast Asia and sales teams in Latin America and the Middle East. Spent time in various different regions, lived in Dubai for a little bit. And really I graduated in 2014. I was in this career actually from 2014 all the way to 2021. A lot of people didn't know that I was doing this with Chop and Block at the same time. It was really it kind of got to that point where, you're pursuing your goals and you kind of have this title and, everything that comes with it. And at the end of the day, I still kind of felt like, man, this isn't really as satisfying. I didn't feel like a lot of what I was doing really spoke to me in the most natural sense. And that's when I also started asking myself, what really matters to me? And, of the many things that matter to me, my culture is really up there amongst the top. And so that's where I started really noticing these patterns of, man, the older I've gotten, it's been tough. I remember in undergrad, when I got away from the house, it was hard for me to get access to the basic cultural elements, right? The music, the food, the language. And then I went back to Houston and I knew where to go find it. And then again, after business school, when I moved around the world, it's everywhere I went, I always had to do what I did in Houston, which is go to where our immigrant community is and then go and get food from there. But along the way, I'm passing by all of these other cultural gateways that have been established in society. And I'm like, man, why do I always have to go out of my way to get access to that little bit of me?
So and, gateways for other cultures, easy to find, again, say, great Mexican food here or great.
Yeah. Food or even I mean, there's been a huge, Afrobeats and just, West African and musical wave that is now permeated, but growing up it wasn't like that. And you started hearing reggaeton music before you heard this, you heard Caribbean music and stuff. And so to me it was just, again, always had to go out of my way to get access to it. And I felt I've been equipped in different ways to be able to take this charter on. And that's when I said, I'm gonna go do it through food, because I like food. Everyone likes food. Everyone likes a good beat. You put those two together, you can get people's attention. And that's when I started becoming more intentional about really understanding the culinary aspects of things. And that's when I started to immerse myself in culinary. And I had worked in restaurants in college, but never from the standpoint of wanting to, again, going to the food industry. But at that point was when I said, okay, hey, if I'm going to do this and I'm going to create the first, you know, contemporary West African inspired concept, I really need to immerse myself in the culinary field as well. And that's where I really started just getting that experience. You know, first thing I did is I went to go apply for a job at Chipotle. They're always hiring.
Yeah, right? You got to back up. You got to back up.
So you're still working. Yeah. You're still working as...
Yeah, so I'm a corporate, exec, flying around. Corporate sale executive in the daytime, and at nighttime I'm a prep cook at Chipotle. Like,
this was cutting, in Houston. Where was this?
This was actually in Dallas. I was in Dallas at the time, bouncing between Dallas and the West Texas oil fields.
Did they know your day job?
A little bit, kind of. I mean, I didn't tell them I was an MBA grad and all of that. I just said, hey, I've worked in restaurants before, and I'm looking for a job as a prep cook, and they. They like what they saw, so they hired me. like I would do that. I'd balance my hours accordingly. And, you know, I'd sometimes be tailing out of the office and heading to the kitchen to go cut peppers. And really, to me, though, like, you know, I had done prep cook jobs when I was working in restaurants in college. And one thing that really stuck out to me, and it's the same thing that stuck out to me in the energy space too, was I saw so much value in those who, unlike myself, that went kind of that MBA route to get into this space and to get into leadership, but those who really worked like out in the field and like really understood the inner workings of what it was that they were doing, could speak the language, and ultimately kind of grew up in that. And so that's the experience I wanted for myself when it came to culinary. Like, I really wanted to understand at the base level, like, how it works. And as a prep cook, you often get, unfortunately, overlooked. And so that was a benefit to me, right? Is I could just be very observant, and I was able to better understand, you know, how product flowed in and out of the kitchen, and ultimately, you know, cut my teeth, pay my dues, and, you know, along the way, make sure I gain as much respect for that position, because I knew one day, you know, I'm going to be running my own concept, and I want to be able to have that same level of humility, you know, as I, you know, make decisions. So, yeah, I was doing both at the same time. And, you know, fortunately, I think because what I'm working on, or you know, the story I'm sharing about the culture and the food that we're serving is still relatively unique to many. And they don't really know what to expect. It just piques a lot of curiosity. And so with that, I was able to, you know, ultimately like take that differentiator and use it as a way to, you know, ultimately help me get access to other folks in the culinary space that were just kind of curious and wanted to support what I was doing. And that's how I started working with, you know, some of the best chefs in the country, and ultimately, you know, understanding how they approach their craft, and, you know, gaining experience from those who really inspired me.
So people like level. Marcus Samuelson, or?
Yeah, like, yeah. Chef Marcus. Uh-huh. I mean, even local, like, yeah. one of my, uh-huh. I would say like I probably can't say that this is my favorite chef. I tell her all the time, I mean, you're my favorite chef, but like Don Burrell, uh-huh. That's my homie. Yeah. Chef Don, like, she took to me early on, even when like I was just starting to plan like my pop-up series. Mm-hmm. Her name had been passed out to me from another chef I really like, a pastry chef named Karen Mann out here locally as well. And that's how the connection was made. So, I mean, we go back to before she made it, before I don't think I've made it yet. I'm just still trying to cut my teeth, but she's made it. But yeah, so worked okay. with her, and then, mm-hmm. you know, it's fortunate, you know, now I'm doing things with, you know, Chef Kwame Nwachi, and have a good relationship now with Chef Eric Ajapong. So it's just been good to see, you know, people really, you know, stand behind and support what I'm doing, and really try to pour into just ultimately seeing this vision succeed.
Houston's original neighborhood downtown is for everyone, and it's poppin'. It's our open-hearted home for our biggest celebrations and our treasured hidden gems. From the world-class theater district to incredible green spaces like Discovery Green, downtown is the place to be. In fact, more people visited downtown Houston last year than the entire population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and San Antonio combined. There's no better time to live downtown than now. From starter apartments to luxury lofts, everyone can take advantage of the arts, business, culture, entertainment, food, and recreation. Now, you might think of downtown as only the heartbeat of Houston's regional economy, which it is, but there's so much more to it, including free events throughout the week with Downtown Houston Plus. From the Market Square Park Farmers Market every Saturday to Yoga Flow every Wednesday, you can find something to do and eat and watch in downtown Houston. Learn more at downtownhouston.org. Downtown Houston, get energized and revived.
So it looks to me like Chop and Block is just succeeding wildly. You know, when I'm there, there's a line. I know lots of people who are raving about, especially that jollof rice, the jambalaya smoky rice that I think is just a great match for Texas and Houston in particular.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Are you surprised by like the reception, how enthusiastic it seems to be? Or was this the plan? You had that in your business plan.
I say this like with the most like humility there. Like, I'm not surprised, but I'm very appreciative. It's like what I was like, it's why I made this drastic change and like was like, I just really felt like this was a fundamental like flaw in society that had to be fixed. And so, you know, I grew up on this and I often reference the iPad. I remember when the iPad was first launched, everyone's like, why do you need an iPad? Like, you don't need one, especially if you already have like a smartphone or an iPod. Like, what do you need a bigger version of it for? And now it's like borderline a necessity is to have a tablet, right? People didn't know what it was that they were missing out on. And that's how I felt about just this story and this culture. And, you know, I really didn't want anyone else to like have the power to like misinterpret it or share it incorrectly. And that's why I took a lot of ownership behind it. But no, I think we have the ancestors to thank for how successful it's been. Because the other thing too is that it influences the culture that I'm discussing, right? It's what over 50 million people in this country come from, right? And you know, it influences beyond that as well. And so the reason that I really believed it was going to be successful is because people are already like eating these foods and flavors and so on today. They just aren't understanding like where it originated from. So all we're doing is really just kind of helping that to resurface and, you know, give its credit where it's due and, you know, share it in a nice positive light. And so it's been great to see the reception. I'm very, very appreciative of it. But I've believed in it, you know, since the beginning, and I continue to.
It looks to me like it is like this great concept. I can very easily imagine Chipotle-like restaurants, Chop and Blocks across the country. Is that what you're going for? And I hope Amen. That you're doing it.
Amen. I mean, I don't know about Chipotle numbers. Those are a lot of numbers, but
y'all are good. All right.
but definitely, yeah. I mean, I won't sell it short either. Yeah. You know, the vision for this is again to take my skill set that I feel like God has blessed me with and exposed me with, and, you know, taking the business aspect of things I'm familiar with, and ultimately, like, my intention was always to build this to scale. So giving it the runway to be able to do so. You know, Houston makes a lot of sense for this to be the first location just because Houston has the second largest West African community outside of West Africa, the largest Nigerian community in the States. And, you know, there's other major cities that are not that far behind, right? And so I look at just the fact that, again, the diaspora has such a large imprint on communities. You know, I'm pretty sure that you can reference a classmate or, you know, a friend, a coworker who comes with this background. And so it's not necessarily foreign for you to, you know, venture out and give it a shot. And there's so many markets where that's still the case. So, you know, the vision is, you know, building this thing to scale and then being able to let it do its thing. And my prayer is that it is definitely beyond Houston.
Yeah. And just what's next for Chop and Block? I know that you just said you hinted at possibly expanding. Is there a new site popping up anytime soon? Or
I wish I could announce one. Working on one. You know, definitely working on it for sure. So I have a few ongoing conversations with multiple spaces, just trying to see where the right fit's going to be. If there's anyone that's interested in seeing a Chop and Block, also feel free to reach out. Always open to those conversations as well. But no, in all seriousness though, like, you know, I'm confident in saying, like, yeah, growth is really important to us. But growing intentionally, like not just growing for the sake to grow, but really being intentional about it. And being able to, you know, understand, you know, where and when it makes sense for us to be where it is that we're ordered to be. And that's important. And then, you know, the other thing too is we're not just a restaurant, in my opinion. Like, we're just really living out a mission. Our mission is to share the beauty of West African culture through food that reshapes society's daily routine. And the restaurant helps us to get people's attention. But, you know, there's other tentacles that I would love to be able to pull people into, because, you know, my goal is when people walk into the restaurant, like, yeah, you came for the food or you came because you taste the flavors, but then, like, you really had an experience. And it doesn't have to be over the top, but, you know, maybe you heard some music that, like, you don't really hear all the time and that, you know, you're really appreciative of. Or maybe it's, you know, our, you know, the cookbooks that we have on the shelves, or, you know, just really even, like, just the, any form of, like, knowledge or information that you can pull in that 5, 10, 15 minutes that you're waiting for your food. Like, that's what's really important to me. And so, you know, I think, if you look at like how we came up with pop-ups and, you know, experiences, like those haven't died either. So we're looking at doing more of those, more programming as well. And ultimately just, you know, seeing, you know, how best it is that we can really, you know, live our mission.
Yeah. I was going to just touch on one last thing that you said about the pop-up experiences. Cause I noticed that, you know, you did a promotion, like a cross promotion with Yvonne Orji, who's a popular actress on Insecure, who a lot of people know, who's also a very proud Nigerian woman. And then also I've seen that you guys did something with Kindred earlier, which, you know, that's a bookstore. So I've seen how you guys are branching out of just the normal restaurant world. Can we expect, you know, in the coming months, is there a specific event coming up?
Yeah, more heat on the way for sure. yeah, I mean, we're all about like the friends of the block is what we call them. Like Yvonne has really become like a very solid friend of the block. Y'all should check out our HBO special that's on HBO right now called
Mama I Made It. It is very funny.
She has another one that's coming out on October 1st. I'm gonna be out there with her in LA on that day as well. So I'm excited for that. Yeah, you know, definitely like any way that we can amplify the voices of those who are also pushing this narrative alongside us, we're all for it. Made good relationships with Kindred Stories here locally. And so we are always in conversations of ways to work together. Even right now, looking at ways that we can work together in store too. So that relationship just kind of continues to grow on a day-to-day basis. We are planning, some programming at the end of November for our 1 year anniversary. And so, you know, more coming up on that. I don't want to spill the beans too much because we still got some more signatures to get, before I feel comfortable doing that. But, I do look forward to promoting that. So if you are, following us on our social media, specifically on Instagram at Chopping Block, CHOPNBLOK_. you know, more information is definitely coming that way, or even better, go on our website and sign up on our block list. And, that's where all that information, you know, first gets channeled out. But absolutely, end of November, big programming on the way. Hopefully you that are all listening to it will be in attendance.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much. I can't wait to see what you're going to do.
No, thank you. Thanks for taking the time and the conversation and,
yeah, I'm just excited. I love just kind of seeing, you know, God's purpose shine out in what we do. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah, this makes me want chopping blocks, so I'll go again this weekend.
That's the danger. That was Chef Ope Omosu and CityCast Houston newsletter writer Brooke Lewis. We will have links to Chopin Block's social media, and if you follow it, you will see all the things that they've got planned. Next up, I am here with producer Carleon Jones. Carly, what else is going on around Houston today?
Hey, Lisa. A defendant who spent 4 days stuck in a Harris County jail processing area following a misdemeanor charge is at the center of a complaint that led state inspectors to finding over 60 other inmates had been held in booking for too long. Police arrested Helen Sabuki on criminal trespassing and criminal mischief charges following a report that she had entered a Memorial Area apartment complex lobby where she did not live and damaged a potted tree. Seems minor, right? Well, after being arrested, she remained in jail processing for the next 99 hours, more than double the state mandated maximum, which is 48 hours. This is according to a Texas Commission on Jail Standard Review. The inspection also noted violations under the new construction and a non-compliance notice on how personal hygiene is handled in processing.
That's it for our show today. Y'all should sign up for Brooke Lewis's newsletter. It is at houston.citycast.fm. We will be back tomorrow. Talk with you then. That was Chef Ope Omosu and Houston, wherever the heck we are. I started calling her Houston Chronicle.